On this episode of The Scorekeepers, join me, your host, Daniel Farrell, as I sit down with conductor James S. Cahan. James is a French conductor currently working in Helsinki, Finland, where he is the principal conductor of the Helsinki Chamber Orchestra, and is the conductor of the Polytech Orchestra. He has been a guest conductor for groups such as the upcoming Israel Philharmonic Orchestra, the Finnish National Radio Symphony Orchestra, and the Helsinki Philharmonic Orchestra, among many others. I'm really excited to hear his take on being a young conductor in today's world. Welcome to The Scorekeepers. Welcome to the show. Thank you for coming on. And it is, what time is it over in Finland? 4 o'clock? 5 o'clock?
It's 3 p.m. right now.
3 p.m. Okay. But before we get started, I was wondering if you could maybe just introduce yourself to the listeners and give us a little bit of background on you.
Yeah, basically, I'm a professional orchestra conductor, relatively young. I'd say I'm at the start of my career. And what I have done until now is that after graduating from high school, I went straight to study orchestral conducting, which is less and less unusual, but still relatively unusual. I think in most cases, people study an instrument before and specialize in some like other subject, either instrumental or composition. I went straight to study conducting. You know, I went here and there, but I settled in Finland at the Sibelius Academy because they have a very well-known and very good orchestral conducting class. I stayed there for bachelor's and master's studies. I graduated last year.
Nice. Congrats. Yeah,
thank you. Well, originally I was considering like leaving and applying for programs here and there for like assistantships, fellowships, and so on. But life was so that I actually had some work here and, you know, and things were fine in Finland, and it started to make more sense to stay at least for now. So actually right now I'm still living there, and I'm just working as a freelancer, and I take care of two orchestras. One of them is a student orchestra, probably the largest, and I would say the most famous student orchestra in Finland. And the other one is a professional chamber orchestra that is called the Helsinki Chamber Orchestra.
You mentioned that you went straight into conducting. Did you before then play an instrument or something? What kind of hooked you into music?
I was a pianist originally. Okay. I also played a little bit, studied double bass at the end of my high school years. I would have liked to spend a bit more time playing double bass because I do think it's important to play in orchestra for a conductor, but that was practically very difficult to handle while traveling and being in Finland. So instead, a few years after arriving in Finland, I picked up the percussion, and more specifically the timpani, as an orchestra instrument. So that I play from time to time with some orchestras. And and so I would say that my main instrument right now is the piano. I also play a bit of timpani. Yeah, and I have some notions of double basses, even though I would really not dare play it anymore.
What kind of got you started in conducting? Because like you said, it is unusual to go right out of high school and like, I want to be conductor. Like, what was the moment that you were like, you know what, this is what I want to do?
Yeah, actually, the funny story is that probably the main reason why, maybe I shouldn't say that in public, but I would say the main reason why I started conducting so early is a little bit out of ignorance. Because the thing is, I'm not coming from a professional musician's family. When I was a kid and I was studying the piano as a kid, like conducting was very, very mysterious and fascinating to me. And I didn't really, until very late, and I would even say until quite a late point in my studies, I didn't really understand so profoundly what conducting was about, exactly what it required from you as a musician and as a human being and so on and so on. And, you know, for me, when I started getting more and more into music and it started to appear that I wanted to pursue a professional career in music, and conducting made sense because it was a summary of a lot of things that I like about music making and human interactions, and parameters of like experience in your orchestra instrument and in your, if you have a different one, your original instruments were not so obvious for me at the time. So I would say what got me started is once like not really being aware of the things that it required from me at first. And the second thing that got me started was also, let's say, in a more like strictly related to conducting. I'd say that I was always really fascinated by, let's say, collective teamwork. And at the same time, I was fascinated by orchestra sounds. And at some point, it became naturally clear that those two meet in the world of conducting, especially because it might sound a bit narcissistic, but I do like managerial position, and I like being sort of organizing things around me. I prefer that to being organized by someone else.
No, I get that. Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about your experience? Obviously, you're a founding member of the Helsinki Chamber Orchestra and its conductor. Can you just talk a little bit about growing that group and, you know, becoming its conductor and shaping the future of that artistic organization?
Yeah, absolutely. So the story of the Helsinki Chamber Orchestra, it started, I think, around 2018, when basically there were a few things that became clear to me and a few colleagues based in Helsinki. There was really, first of all, in Helsinki, there was no established chamber orchestra specializing in chamber orchestra repertoire. That means that if you wanted to hear like symphonies by, you know, like string symphonies by like different composers or Haydn and things like that, it's not really possible, because every now and then you have the big orchestras of Helsinki, which are Helsinki Philharmonic and Helsinki the Finnish Radio Symphony Orchestra, who perform every now and then in a smaller setting, but it's still pretty rare. I think they like to use their full effective, and they are not so specialized in chamber orchestra repertoire. So I think in terms of repertoire, we felt that there was space to take and a lot to offer. We also thought that the Helsinki scene lacked a little bit an orchestra that was meant for younger, like young freelancers that were sort of already graduated from the academy, but not yet with a permanent position. And that proved to be very true, because that's, I would say, most of our musicians, or at least many of our musicians, are in that position. And I also feel like, you know, for foreigners in Finland, it's not always so easy to integrate themselves, and it also happened naturally, that was not the plan, but it also happened naturally that this orchestra became a good stepping stone for them to become active musicians in Finland. So those were basically the founding ideas of the orchestra, and also we wanted to be versatile. We wanted to offer interesting repertoire. That was we wanted to do a lot of modern music, which we do. We wanted also to perform rarities and like pieces that were sort of in our eyes unjustly forgotten. And the final thing that was very important, I would say the final pillar of this orchestra, is that we wanted an orchestra that was managed by its musicians, and that was democratic, and where we could experiment with let's say, operating differently without the traditional structure of power,
right.
You know, like in an orchestra. So it's a little bit like, I know that this word is not always so good to say in the state, but it's a little bit like a socialist orchestra.
Right. Oh, yeah. Shivering in their boots over here in the U.S. when you say socialist.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yes, exactly.
But a lot of people don't realize that, you know, a lot of orchestras and artistic organizations are, you know, not really run by oftentimes the musicians. They're run by people, a lot of the times, with more business sense about, you know, what for ticket sales, supporters, subscribers, which is valuable, but having musicians at the helm can sometimes glean some really cool artistic moments.
Yeah, I would say that as far as I know, most orchestras are not managed by their musicians. They do have their words to say, of course. I think they, for example, it's quite common nowadays, less so in Finland actually, but in many other countries, that the orchestra votes on their next, you know, chief conductor and so on. But the orchestra is not managed by a musician. The orchestra is managed by, you know, some kind of executive committee and so on. And the orchestra is often represented there, but it's not the same. We are really entirely managed by the orchestra members, and we are actually, I mean, I think it's more or less the same in the States with the system of like associations versus companies. I think most orchestras are usually companies, and we are actually an association, which means that, you know, the members meet once a year in a general assembly, and they decide among themselves who becomes executive board members and so on, and that's quite different, I'd say, than.
So I saw that you recently had done a recording session with the group for an album. Can you talk a little bit about what that experience was like?
Oh, yeah. Well, recordings, that's always... Well, I mean, recordings are amazing, and at the same time, they can be one of the most challenging thing in the world, especially in terms of team spirit. Because it was our first fully professional, complete, like, recording session, and by that I mean that we are recording for a label with a CD that will probably come out in around a year or so, with a producer, etc. And that experience, recordings are, and that's interesting to know for the listener, is that what you hear in recording is very different than what you hear in real life in a concert, because in recording, the way we work is that for a movement that is like 10 minutes, we have maybe 3 hours, and we record a passage over and over and over again until it is perfect, until not even one player in the orchestra is playing a little bit sharp or a little bit flat. We stop, we do it again. The producer, you know, puts us on the right track and guides the process. But in some ways, I mean, I don't totally agree with that view, but some people say that recordings are the most unmusical experience in the world, because you're just doing the same thing over and over again, and you are just focusing on it being 100% perfect. And that's a very different experience than the concert, because in the concert, you just focus as a musician on enjoying your time, on, you know, on like, on feeling a sort of deeper connection with the music and, you know, the compositional gods and whatever. But you really have this sort of trance-like moments in concert. And I think in recording, that's at least, in my experience so far, that's not super realistic. Like, you have to think very practical. You have to, as a conductor, you conduct very differently, I feel, in a recording, because you just have to make sure that everything you do makes people play perfectly. That is not really the same in concert, because I sometimes, I'm not sure what my former teachers would think if they heard me saying that, but I feel that sometimes in concert, creating a small, how would you say, like, well, extra challenge for the musicians, or maybe some slight, very, very small layer of excitement and adrenaline that is right. sort of not planned is actually great.
It's an experience. I mean, you got the audience there, you're in the moment.
Exactly.
There's a lot of energy there that you just don't have sometimes in recording.
Yeah, and it carries, it really comes through to the audience. And it's, you do that sometimes at the expense of perfection. When I say perfection, I mean it on a purely technical level. And this is a luxury that you don't have in a recording.
You also mentioned your work with Polytech Orchestra, which was the student orchestra that you were mentioning. Can you talk a little bit about that group?
Well, so that the Polytech Orchestra is the oldest and probably the largest student orchestra in Finland. They are 100 years old now. We are celebrating their centenary this year. And they are composed, like there is around, it varies between the seasons, but minimum, I would say there is always minimum 80 players. And last year in our centenary concert, we were 126 musicians on stage. So it's rather large. We had 10 double bass players, which is not very often the something you find very often in even in professional orchestras. And yeah, it's a very interesting orchestra because they are very motivated. They play well for a student orchestra. In my opinion, the standards of playing are higher than, for example, in France. And at the same time, what is very beautiful about this orchestra is that there is no audition. Anyone can join. I'm a not so good double bass player, but if tomorrow I resigned as their conductor and I wanted to join the Polytech Orchestra, I could. And no one would ask me to play in an audition, and no one would kick me out regardless of how good or bad I play. And I think it's very inspiring because that means that even though we don't have any selection, even though anyone that wants can join, we are still able to perform really, really good concerts with nice energy and beautiful musical moments, and with a very challenging programs. Last year we did Mahler First Symphony and Rachmaninoff Piano Concerto. So, you know, it's not the easiest pieces yeah. for orchestras. And now in around one week we are doing Kullervo, which is a symphonic poem by Sibelius. That's arguably way harder than Mahler, actually. So we do tackle pretty ambitious programs, and it always works. They call it, within the orchestra internally, we call it the Polytech Orchestra miracle, the PEO miracle. That doesn't matter what kind of difficult program we do, and even with people, because of course people are, they are professionals in different fields and students and so on. They don't always have time to practice as much as they should, but we always manage to do a good concert.
What is the kind of age split on that? I would imagine it's really big. You have really young, really old players.
Yeah, I think the youngest are 18, which is the age they are when they start studying mm-hmm. at the university. And I think the oldest right now, I would say around 50 to 60 years old.
Wow.
Yeah, it's quite big. And if you are wondering about the average age, I would say that most people are in their late 20s, early 30s.
Wow, that's an awesome community group. I wish we had more of that kind of thing here. You know, I think most ensembles here, you have to have some form of an audition. And there are limitations then, you know, people that are maybe less experienced that are trying to get some experience, trying to learn and be around others that have more knowledge than them, then they just can't do it.
Yeah, I think that's actually an interesting point you raise, because this thing of not having auditions is, I think it's the first time I hear about this. I'm not sure you will find any student orchestra in France that doesn't have some form of audition. I think what is interesting about that is that originally, there are two reasons why it's like that, and The first one is that Finland as a country has like has some interesting cultural or sociological aspect that make it possible for this kind of orchestra to happen. Finland is a country that's culturally relies a lot on, let's say, individual responsibility. And individual responsibility and following the rules is something very, very valued here, much more than in France, for example, where, for example, in France, rules are I exaggerate a little bit, but rules are seen as an obstacle to overcome mm-hmm. or something to operate around. And in Finland, rules are something that you know, when someone tells you to do something, you should do it, you know, within a certain setting. So what that means is that in Finland, if the conductor tells you to practice, you will practice. If the conductor puts pressure on you to practice, like, you will, even though there is no consequence, like no practical consequence for you not doing it. Like, if you don't practice, you're not going to get kicked out. You're not going to be publicly shamed. But in Finland especially, there is this concept that you should work for the greater good a little bit, and it's much stronger here than in other countries. The other thing that helps with this aspect is that this orchestra is very old, and originally it was created as an orchestra for people to just have fun. And I think little by little over the course of the last 100 years, and thanks to a lot of my predecessors became quite famous conductors right. afterwards. For example, Sakari Oramo, who is a very famous conductor, was a conductor of that orchestra. And Eva Ollikainen and Dimitris Slobodeniuk, I'm not sure if they work a lot in the States, but in Europe they are, you know, they have quite a reputation. They're relatively famous and so on. And they were also like conductors of this orchestra. And I think what happened naturally over the course of 100 years is that people started to realize that having fun and playing well is not mutually exclusive.
What do you think are some of the challenges that modern conductors face and young conductors face going into this field?
That's a good question. I think the main challenge for young conductors is pressure and stress over, like, related to your own career. I think that the time has changed, because if you look at famous conductors from 70 years ago, the way the industry worked was very different. You were a young conductor, you studied or you didn't study, you were maybe co-repetitor, and for 10, 15 years, you were working in a small opera house, you know, in some small cities, and, you know, learning there the craft of conducting little by little, doing all the mistakes, gaining experience just little by little with good musicians, but in a safe environment. You mm-hmm. were not like exposed to the entire world, and you were doing that like for many years, and that's why a lot of legendary conductors were actually not so famous when they were young. Because when they were young, they were preparing, they were in those smaller places, they were active. Some of them, of course, like, were conducting very young, the largest orchestras. But I think that little by little, what started to happen is that nowadays, for young conductors, there is a sense of you need to go very fast, very far. And it works very well for some conductors who are, I would say, very fast, very ready. But in my eyes, for a vast majority of us, it's a little bit counterintuitive and problematic, because what happens is that we get to conduct very big and famous orchestras very young, and we're not necessarily ready for it. We are not necessarily going to do the best job in the world, which is fine. It's still a good learning opportunity, but the problem comes with visibility of those concerts and in a larger sense, events, because I also include conducting competitions. So, you know, you go, you're 25 or 28, and you go in a large conducting competition. Nowadays, they can all be seen on YouTube and so on. And, you know, maybe you don't have so much experience conducting like the most famous professional orchestra of your country. Maybe you don't have so much experience conducting some of the 20 best orchestras in the world. And there you are for the first time conducting, I don't know, the London Symphony Orchestra or the Danish Radio Symphony Orchestra for the first time. Like in a competition, you have 20 minutes, you are like, you have cameras and you, they are all, you know, everybody can see you. And regardless how good or bad you do, those videos are going to stay forever. People are going to type your name on Google, and because they are such high visibility events, the first thing they are going to see is you conduct however good or bad you managed in this very weird moment. And I have some colleagues who I admire a lot and who I feel I see them sometimes in these concerts or events or whatever. And for some of them, not all of them, I feel, well, I know this person and I can see that he or she is stressed. I can see that they are not, because of very obvious reasons that are not related at all to their talent and so on, that they are not in a sort of comfortable zone where they can really give their best 100%. And I find it a little bit sad that this is what sort of remains of them for a long time on internet. And it's a little bit the same for professional concerts. If you find yourself at 25, like conducting like a national orchestra, you might do very well. And many people do very well. And you might not do so well. And then the orchestras might feel like, okay, well, that wasn't like, this guy is talented, but maybe not on the level of our other conductors who are older and more experienced. So yeah, long story short, I think that kind of like the way the industry operates today is very challenging for young conductors because we don't have a safe space to learn for a long time. Personally, this is something I bypass a little bit with Helsinki Chamber Orchestra, for example, and the Polytech Orchestra, which for me are places where I can safely do mistakes and learn.
I think for both of your groups, it sounds like there's a big priority for engagement with the community, the community at large. What is it like as a conductor to engage with the community? How is it that you build a sense of respect and engagement within the larger artistic and non-artistic community of the place you're in?
As a disclaimer, I probably need to point out that those community engagement things, notions mean very different things in the state and in Europe. I think as far as I understood, in the States, there is some kind of notion that you actually physically meet with the audiences in like not necessarily in musical events and so on. And at least that's what I've seen some colleagues do over there. In Europe, it's very different. When we say community engagement, we mean that the way we organize musical events we have a lot of variety in the way we organize musical events. And those things are, actually, I need to think a little bit about it because I realize now that for the Polytech Orchestra and the Helsinki Chamber Orchestra, those things, the community engagement aspect is very different. Frankly, with the Polytech Orchestra, the community engagement is a thing that the orchestra is part of a university, of a very large university, and it's part of the university community. So that means that the group of the orchestra, like that they have parties, that they have social events and so on. And the fact that basically any member of the university can be in the orchestra means that sort of in theory, anyone can come to those parties. Or at least to the after parties, but And I think that's, in a funny way, the Polytechs Orchestra audience engagement relies on parties to a very large extent, because people know that, okay, like we will have a concert and then we will have a huge, huge party where people are going to, like most of them probably are going to go home with the first metro in the morning. And, you know, and that's what the orchestra is famous for, I think, in the university also. And that's what drives people to come to the orchestra, to play in the orchestra. And I think that because, and the orchestra is naturally engaging for people because also that are not musicians, because they want to see their friends perform. For Helsinki Chamber Orchestra, it's very different because we do have after parties, but they are not like on the same scale of a huge after party with 80 people or 100 people. But I think in our sense, we start more and more to think of community engagement by doing projects tailored and made for non-professional musicians. And by that, for example, last year we had a concert where the first hour was a sort of open rehearsal where I was explaining to the audience what I was doing, what we were working on, why we were working on some things. We were sort of displaying a little bit here and there, you know, like going into some musical interesting, like basically it was a pedagogical format, mm-hmm. that sort of the goal was to give insights to the audience on the piece and bypass a little bit the feeling sometimes that, wow, this is very beautiful, but I don't understand any of it. And it was actually quite successful. I mean, we got lots of positive feedback on that. So this is something that I think we will try to do every now and then. We might call it, I don't know, like immersive concert, or if it's too cheeky, we will call it pedagogical concert or something like that. We also have projects, for example, now in the winter, we have a project where we are performing with music schools alongside music schools in one concert that gathers two music schools that, you know, that produce a lot of professional musicians later on, and they are going to join us and play in our concert, and we are going to coach them. So the goal there is to also like give to these kids the experience of playing with professionals and maybe have these kids, you know, also bring their friends that might not be musicians. What else? Yeah, and we have also a project, it's a little bit early in the works, but we have some ideas for next year also about doing things in schools or with some more pedagogical aspect. I think that's what we call within our orchestra community engagement.
Yeah, those sound amazing. And I think for a lot of students, the chance to sit around professional musicians and play with them and learn not only just like the technical music stuff, but just to gather some life advice from them and to learn, you know, about their experiences, I think is super valuable.
Yeah, also because what I heard is that these are the kind of events that cultivate the love for classical music.
What is your approach to new music with your ensembles? Because I think some chamber groups, some chamber ensembles are often a little afraid of touching new music. How do you approach it, and what are the challenges kind of inherent in performing and rehearsing music that's never been heard before?
Yeah, we love it. We do it a lot, but really, really, really a lot. I would say that it's quite rare that our concerts don't have a piece by a living composer.
Wow.
Especially nowadays, or at least you know, a composer from the last 70 years. So I think that's partially a thing in Finland, that there is not so much this, at least I don't feel a strong barrier between new music and ancient music. And so for us, it's you know, it's just a normal everyday life. I don't really approach it that different to working on old pieces. It's kind of, at least to my eyes, it's the same. And when I have a project like most of our projects that mixes all the new music, I don't feel like as an orchestra and personally that I work in such a different way. Like the essentials are the same. You learn the score, you learn the music, you learn to love the music if you didn't know it before. And then you work with the orchestra to fulfill the vision of the composer. Of course, the main difference is that with modern music, I would say maybe the only real difference is that with new music, sometimes the composer is there. Most of the time, it's a great, great asset. You can ask him like clarification. I made this joke this summer. We were working with a composer on a world premiere, and I said to the orchestra that you know the composers they give some feedback and the way they communicate is maybe as polite and so on, it's maybe not as effective as the way we learn to communicate as conductors. And so I say to the orchestra, like, yeah, I can translate, I speak composer. Because sometimes the composers go and say, yeah, like this part, it should really feel like growing and, you know, the wave of the sea, like in the morning going, you know, and then as a conductor, sometimes you have to just listen to that and go, okay, so this is composer for, okay, he or she wants to come like a crescendo going into bar 13, and there she wants, you know, the sound to, you know, the vibrato to amplify a little bit on bar 12 and so on. So you have to translate.
We appreciate you translating.
Yeah, exactly. So, but other than that, basically, it's for me, it's quite the same and it's very natural. And I think for the orchestra's musicians, it's the same.
I just wanted to talk about some upcoming stuff for you. I saw that you're conducting, I think as a guest conductor, the La Tragedia de Carmen, which I originally just thought was the opera Carmen, and it had a foreign name, but apparently, you know, I looked it up and I was like, oh, wow, this is an entirely different piece. I was wondering if you could just talk a little bit about that whole thing coming up.
Yeah, so that's actually, that's an interesting project because it's with an ensemble called Miroir Étendu, they are a sort of small modular ensemble in France who are used to do really like experimental projects and so on. So basically it's a revisiting of Carmen mixed with electronics and mixed with different, you know, of course with a different ensemble setting and partially rewritten by the ensemble. And I think it's going to be very interesting. I haven't really had a chance to hear it live yet, but so far it looks really like I'm quite excited. And also the staging is going to be really interesting. It's usually there is a quite strong, it's very different, I would say, to traditional opera staging. So yeah, it's going to be a healthy mix of old music turned modern in a way.
Any other major projects on the horizon for you and your group?
Yeah, I mean, there are some stuff that probably I shouldn't really say before they are official. I mean, I don't mind. I'm not a guy with secrets, but I was told that in terms of protocol, it's not always appropriate. Shame. But yeah, so but at least for my groups and what I can speak of, if there are any big projects, well, as far as the groups I manage, not really. I mean, it's pretty much business as usual. And then of course, like life goes on and career develops. With the Helsinki Chamber Orchestra especially, we do have a plan to grow But it's a long-term plan. And so we have to be patient and do things little by little and step by step.
Great. I mean, it has been amazing talking to you and hearing your insights as a young conductor, and been awesome seeing you grow and seeing all these projects that you take on. I'm always like, wow, looks so professional in all the pictures. But it's been fabulous talking to you, James.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, the one thing I would, let's say, I don't know of who, like, what your audience consists of. I would like to say to the young composers that, I mean, I don't mean to overly advertise the country I live in or the continent I live in, but I really feel that in Europe there is, and especially in Finland, but probably in other places in Europe, that there is a sort of movement towards making modern music more and more mainstream. And for young composers, wherever they are based, if you feel that your music is a little bit sidelined, and not taken as seriously because it's modern and for some musicians it sounds weird and so on, then I really encourage you to look at Europe, whether for work or studies or any other experience or for networking, because that in some countries more than others, but still it's really, I think it's changing, and I think it's becoming, it might be, I'm not talking on a professional and financial level, but on a sort of ideological level, it might feel more rewarding there.
Wow, amazing. Great advice. Awesome. Thanks again, James.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for having me.
James had some wonderful insights into his work as a conductor. Be sure to check his site for all of his performance dates. Thanks for listening to The Scorekeepers. The Scorekeepers is produced by Daniel Farrell Music and Sound, with graphic and visual design by Patrick Farrell. Scorekeepers is proudly hosted and recorded using Zencastr. Make sure you subscribe to hear new episodes of The Scorekeepers wherever you listen, and be sure to rate and review this episode to help us find new listeners. Thanks for listening.